and welcome to A Cast of Entrepreneurs. I'm Elaine Stroud, Chief Executive of the Entrepreneurs Forum, and I'm delighted to have with me, as ever, Sally Cowling. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Elaine.
You all right?
Yes, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm very much looking forward to this conversation. It's one that we've had in the planning for quite some time, and I'll introduce our guests and explain why we're so excited to have you in the studio. So first up, I have Graham Purvis from Robson Laidler. Good afternoon, Graham. How
Hi,
are you doing?
Elaine. Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
And sitting next to Graham today, we have Nikki Clark from UMI.
Hi, Elaine.
Hi. And finally, we have Aman Shahel from Tapered Plus.
Nice to see you again, Elaine.
Nice to see you too. Well, the reason we've got all three of you in the studio together is that you have all become B Corps in the last, I'm saying last 12 months. Is that correct?
Well, not quite. And so, certainly, yeah. Graham, you're on to your new, your reaccreditation.
Yeah, so
shortly,
we're in year three. So we were July 21. So we've got to go through the process again.
We're going to ask you about that. All three of you are B Corp registered, and we're going to explore a little bit about what that means for business, why it is that you've decided to go down that route, and some of the benefits that it brings. But before we get into all of that, we're interested in finding out a little bit more about your businesses and how you got to here in the first place. And I'll start with Aman. Can you maybe just tell us a little bit about how did Tapered Plus come about?
Yeah, sure, Elaine. As a company, we're nearly 10 years old now, and Tapered Plus was born out of my personal frustration. So I was working for a big corporate company at the time. I looked at my boss at the time, didn't want his job. I looked at his boss and I thought, I wouldn't want that for all the tea in China. At the same time, there was a massive movement with UK manufacturers, but they didn't have a good route to market. They were all competing on price, etc. So I thought, well, if I do this for myself, be an outlet for these UK manufacturers to be doing this tapered insulation directly to blue chip companies, there could be something in it. Launched, first 6 months were horrific. My ego took a real good beating. I wasn't as good as I thought I was, and we turned over 17K. Plan for year one was to turn over around about £500,000. So we were way off target, but we finished year one on 817. So it's really started to take off. And we've been doubling in size every year since and delivered £11 million worth of projects last year.
Oh, that's fantastic. So tell the listeners, if they're not familiar with the business, what is it that you actually do?
Sure thing. We design and supply tapered insulation schemes for flat roofs across the UK and now in Europe as well.
Oh, brilliant. And did you feel when you were growing up, did you want to have your own business, or was it just came about because of the circumstance you were in that corporate career?
I would say I'm an accidental entrepreneur. It was never part of the plan. I went through the normal route, shall we say. So if you're playing the game of life, you can go to the university or the business route. I went down the university route, so I did a degree, did another one, enjoyed learning, started on a graduate training scheme and just remained in construction. I was quite content, had a nice car, good salary, good holidays. But when I got to my mid-30s, something started burning up inside of me and I just thought, I've got to take this opportunity. We can be so much better than our competition. And we took the plunge. My hairline's gone back. I've got a lot of white hairs now over the last 9 years, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
And what about for you, Nikki? Was yours born out of frustration as well?
I guess a little bit, or I suppose in some ways as well, arrogance. There was a few of us. I was only one of the founders of UMI, and we all believed that we could make it easier for businesses to access the right advice and finance to be able to do more. And it was that belief really that drove us to establish UMI back in 2007. We are a little bit unusual still in today's world. So we're 100% employee owned, which we're really, really proud about and works well for us. And we've worked right across throughout the UK and provided advice and access to finance to over 600,000 businesses so far, but on a mission to do much, much more than that over the next few years.
Fantastic. And were you working for a corporate before you set up UMI?
Oh, I've had a right checkered past. So I started out life in banking, which was pretty corporate. Then I went into a lovely SME in the soft drinks industry. Then I dabbled with working with my husband and we set up our own business. But we are still married today, but I definitely couldn't work with him. And then ended up at UMI, yeah.
Brilliant. And for you, Graham?
Yeah, slightly different. So Robson Laidler has been around for 104 years, despite appearances. I haven't been there for that long. But I joined the firm in 1998. So I've been there a while. So my background, I'm a law graduate, fell into revenue law, and then from that became a chartered tax advisor. Never something that as a child I was yearning to be, but that's how it fell. And so I was with the firm, as I say, from 98 in that capacity and became managing director in 2016. So essentially felt the business needed to go in a different direction than it was going in at that time. And so I've been doing that, and I still do a bit of tax work as well on the side.
And what about entrepreneurial influences from when you were growing up? Did any of you have those?
I had my grandfather was a big influence on me. So he was, I'm from North Northumberland originally. And so he was an orphan essentially, but he, through his own hard work and effort, really built up a business in North Northumberland and a property portfolio. So he was always kind of banging on to me about, you know, you've got to learn to earn. And yeah, he was a role model for me in that respect.
It's been interesting in doing this podcast, the number of people that we've spoken to that do have either a family member or a close family friend, which they might not have noticed was an entrepreneur when they were growing up. But in retrospect, when you think about it, you think actually maybe they were quite a big influence.
Definitely.
Well, we're here because, as I said previously, you all are B Corp registered. But let's start with understanding what is a B Corp. Who would like to explain what a B Corp actually is?
So essentially, being B Corp certified means that you are a business that places equal importance on people, the planet in which we live, and profit that you make within your business. And I guess the emphasis is on equal. And if any one of those three kind of features or stakeholders is out of balance, then you really should be looking at questioning whether or not you're being the best business that you can be, as far as B Corp certification is concerned. So it genuinely believes that as a kind of ecosystem, we as businesses need people, because all businesses need people in some way, shape or form to make them work. And people need to live and thrive, and we need our planet to do that. So one is entirely dependent on the other, and that's the way in which we should lead and run our businesses.
And B Corp Lab, the UK version, has come out of the States where it originated. And here in the UK, there's a framework that you have to be compliant to, and you have to register and change your articles.
Yeah, well, the framework is consistent right across the globe. So there is a B Lab in most countries now around the world. And you're quite right, certification started in the States. One of the founders was the gentleman who set up Patagonia, for example, a brand that everybody will probably know. And then it sort of crossed various oceans and was adopted in other countries. And each of the B Lab leads the certification in their particular country. But the framework and the certification is actually highly consistent across the world.
And Graham, from Robson Laidler, you adopted this 3 years ago, as you've told us previously. So would have been one of the early adopters in this part of the UK.
Yeah.
What inspired you to actually become a B Corp and become one of the leaders in this sector?
Yeah, kind of started off with when I became MD, as I sort of alluded to before. I went on a seminar and the guy there was talking about a book by Jim Collins called Good to Be Great. And in that, he was talking about people getting on your bus and heading in a direction and in the right seats, et cetera, et cetera. And I came back from that and said to my fellow directors, I'm not sure how we kind of know where we're going with this business. So it was focusing. I wanted to really focus on the people side of things, because I think that if you look after your people, they provide a better service to your customers, who will then pay you more, buy more from you. So it started off from that kind of, we looked at what is our purpose as a business, and we came up with a cooperative effort, including everybody in the business coming up with that, which is to make a positive difference to people's lives. And that's all of our stakeholders. So then that was kind of running on in the background. And then I read a book by a guy called Jason Harbour. It was called Business for Good, or Business is a Force for Good. And in that, he mentioned B Corps. So then I just did a bit of Googling around that. And I felt that really that was that accreditation was the manifestation of us as a business and what we wanted to represent. So that's a long-winded explanation, but that's how I came about it. And then did the B impact assessment, which is the framework, see how you score on that, and then decided to persuade the other directors that I think this was the right thing for our business to go for it.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because 3 years ago, B Corp wasn't as well known as it is today.
Yeah.
And I would say today, a lot of businesses and owners would have heard of B Corp. They might not have investigated it for them, but it's something that's more commonly known. But it wasn't 3 years ago, and you found it almost by accident as a framework to help you achieve your business goals.
Yeah. I think it was about 500 B Corps at that time in the UK in 2021. Now there's 2,000.
Yeah, and that shows the rate of growth and adoption, which is a good thing. And we'll explore. What was it like for you, Nikki? At what point did you decide that was the framework that you were going to go down and it was right for your business?
Yeah, so a little differently for us. So when we established the business back in 2007, we established it with a really clear purpose, which was to take the hard work out of finding and using the best information, advice and finance for other businesses. And we set the business up with three success measures at the time, and they've been what we've stuck with right the way through, and that was whether we were a workplace where talent thrived, our long-term balance sheet health, not our short-term profitability, and the difference that we made in the communities within which we lived and worked. And over the years, we've developed all sorts of different kind of proxies and indicators to measure our actual achievement against those. And then about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we stumbled across B Corp. And lo and behold, we didn't know about this whole people, planet, profit thing. We'd never heard that language before. But all of a sudden, our three success measures kind of really aligned with that thinking. And it gave us an absolutely fantastic framework and external validation to what we thought we were doing well anyway. So like Graham, we embarked on the business impact assessment, which was a little scary at the time because it is quite detailed. And then we thought, actually, this is the right thing to do. It works really well. It doesn't give us all good news. It really clearly points out areas where we can do more and improve and have an even greater impact on certain stakeholder groups. And then when we felt confident, we went for the actual certification. And I think that's really important to understand. The actual just doing the business impact assessment is a great tool for any business. And, you know, being B Corp certified, we're really, really proud about, but it's not the be all and end all. Not everybody has to be B Corp certified, but I would highly advocate having a look at the business impact assessment as a framework.
It's free.
And it's completely free.
So any business can do the framework, can't they? You can just go onto the B Corp website. Well, actually, you can't if you're a not-for-profit. I've learned that, and that's us as the Entrepreneurs Forum.
You can still do the assessment, but you can't become a
B Corp. That's correct. But I've been on and had a look at it for us, and it does work you through those three different pillars. And there's, I mean, really robust questions, and it's a health check for you as a business. I mean, both of you have said that it's helped in terms of giving a framework which then aligns your strategy.
Yeah.
And that's really benefited you. For you, Aman, what was your inspiration and how did you decide that this was right for you? Because you're fairly new into this.
Yeah, so we've just had our 6 month anniversary. So we're the newest B Corps on this panel here. For us, I learned about B Corps through some other companies that we align with through the Goldman Sachs program. And sometimes, well, Billie Jean King said, what you see, you can become. So they took the plunge and they actually got the accreditation. I was a bit worried because we're such a traditional industry with traditional customers and traditional suppliers. But at the same time, part of me was very curious because I thought we do great things by our people. We do great things about sustainability and we really push hard to raise a bar in our industry. So let's just test ourselves. So we went through the B assessment. We had well over 100 points at that stage. But then once we started going through the process, those points started getting chopped down.
So tell us about the 100 points. Is that the minimum that you need to
qualify? It was 80 at the time.
And that's through the scoring mechanism. So you might fill in a question and it scores you based on your response.
Correct. But one good thing about the B Corp's certification process, they're very robust. So if something's a bit woolly, they'll just remove it. And we just saw our points dwindle, but we ended up being a B Corp certified company, which means for us that's the start of the journey, not the end. So we'll aim to improve that every year going forwards. We have an internal B Corps team that makes sure that B Corp is alive and well and living within the business, and they meet every Thursday, and it keeps pushing on and it keeps us on our toes to be better. It allows us to compete against other companies, not just in our industry. It allows us to benchmark, so it's a very important stride for us as a business.
So what sort of things did you have to change to become a B Corp?
It was a validation. It was changing the articles was one big thing because we have investors in place and they were like, oh, that's a, a bit of a push, but we got that through.
So when you say changing the articles, let's explain what that actually means, because your articles are essentially the rules of the company, and most people start by adopting the default articles that Companies House put out. What is different with the B Corp certified articles?
It just means essentially that we agree to be a B Corp's company and live by those values.
Yeah. So when you're making decisions, you're taking into account the impact of that decision on all of your stakeholders.
Which is why when you have investors in the business, it can sometimes be challenging, because some investors, there's lots of forward-thinking investors in today's world, but some investors are focused purely on the fiscal performance of the business rather than those other two success measures. So, you know, clearly you have a forward-thinking set of investors, or open-minded at the very least.
We do, and we believe doing the right thing will come back to us in terms of profit anyway. So it's just aligned with our values and our principles as a business.
So you legally change your articles, so now you're legally obliged to consider all three of those pillars. What else did you have to change?
We did have to slightly change our culture as a business. We also codified the way we treat our people. I think that was important. And getting a lot of information out of our customer base plus our supplier base was challenging as well.
So if you're talking about suppliers, in practice, what did you have to ask your suppliers for that you, I don't know if you felt a bit awkward going and asking for information that you hadn't previously?
We're in an industry which has a lot of greenwash, unfortunately, Elaine. Construction is known for being quite old-fashioned and traditional. When you look under the hood of a supply chain, that's when it gets really interesting. So we had to go with our suppliers and look right down their supply chain as well, warts and all, and that was an interesting journey to go on.
Did you end up having to change some of your supply chain as a result of what you saw underneath those hoods?
Fortunately not, because we chose our suppliers based on their values and their culture, and they were aligned with us, so we grew organically together. It just validated those decisions that we made early doors in the business.
And Nikki, for you, when you first did the impact assessment, were there any surprises in there that you felt you had to change?
I think for us, perhaps not surprises, but the real tests were around evidence. You know, if there's one big word that stands out for me with B Corp certification, it's evidence. So you think, you know, you've got a really credible story and that's backed up with facts and so on and so forth. But when you're forced, you know, when you have to, in the way that B Corp makes you really evidence how you're doing something and what the actual impact's been on what is sometimes quite a long supply chain or sort of distant stakeholder group in some regards, it's hard. So that really tested us, even though we thought we were good in that area. And then the other area that tested us and still does, and this is one of the areas that I hope when we recertify we'll see significant progress in, is supply chain management. We didn't have the rigour and robustness in understanding the credentials of our supply chain at the outset. You know, we thought we chose people well, but actually when you really looked at it properly, we weren't doing it as consciously as we should have done, and we're still improving that today. So there's still lots of work for us to do in that arena.
And when you talk about evidence, can you give us an example of something that you had to provide evidence for that was something that you thought you were doing well?
So, for example, we established the UMI Community Fund some years back now, and we distribute that fund to community projects and organisations that address isolation in communities, and the County Durham Community Foundation manage it for us across the UK. And we thought that was huge amounts of evidence. That's a great thing to do. And, you know, there's quite a lot of money gone through it, so we could say how much money had been invested and distributed through it. But then they kept saying, but what's happened as a consequence of the money? You know, how many people has it reached, and what difference did it actually make to their lives? And it's the depth that the actual assessment goes into that really tests you, I think.
So they're trying to kind of cut out the greenwashing that you mentioned, Amanda. You can't just go in and wing it with B Corp. You've got to have the evidence.
No, and that's exactly the terms that I usually use when anybody asks me if they should do it. I'm like, well, just make sure you're not fluffing anything or winging it.
Totally. I mean, for us, we supply insulation. So you think that's going to be the greenest material in the world. It's reducing carbon. It's insulating buildings. But then when you look at the insulation and what's made in it, you go down the line. Oh, there's actually a chemical there that comes from China. That's it. That's scratched off the list.
So has it made you, in terms of supply chain, is it easier if you then, your supply chain are B Corps as well?
I would say not. I mean, we do enjoy working with B Corps because I think you do get that broader kind of cultural alignment that we were talking about. But actually, going back to my previous point, you can have all the credentials of being a B Corp without being a B Corp. So we want to make sure that we don't get hung up on people having the badge. What we're actually after is people having the ethics and the standards and the approaches rather than the actual badge.
And how about for you then, Graham, with the impact assessment? How is that process for you?
Yeah, exactly what the others have said, really, really data intensive and just shines a spotlight on stuff as a professional services firm you didn't really think about, you know. So our supply chain in the past was basically based, selection was based on price and convenience, really. But it shines a light on a much wider scope that you have to consider when you're looking at the supply chain. And the B Corp is wanting to have advocacy. You want to be promoting the same ethics in terms of every business or customer or person that you interact with. So yeah, it took a long time because I did it personally. So it did take me a long time to do that. And the, as Nikki said, the depth of the information. So how many of your supply chain are owned by disadvantaged groups or people? You know, it's not something that you know kind of off the top of your head. And for us in our kind of industry, quite interesting, we give tax advice. So the B Lab were very interested in the type of tax advice that we were giving, i.e. we weren't promoting offshore tax evasion or stuff like that. So it's kind of you know, as a tax advisor, I'm paid to mitigate people's taxes.
If you're enjoying the conversations on this podcast, then get involved. The Entrepreneurs Forum is a membership organisation for entrepreneurs based in the northeast of England. You can find out all the details by going to our website, entrepreneursforum.net. So let's turn it around. You're really proud to have got that affiliation and that accreditation. So let's talk about some of the benefits and what that brings to a business. We'll start with you, Graham, because I'm interested to carry on this conversation. So from an accountancy practice point of view, being a B Corp, that's obviously helped your strategy and it's given you that framework and that direction that you were seeking when you read Good to Great, another book that we talk about a lot on this podcast. It always seems to come up, doesn't it, yeah. Sally? So from a business point of view, how has that benefited your organisation?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of areas, really. I think one is it's a difficult recruitment market for us, but I think a lot of people who've come to us looking in interviews have referenced us being a B Corp as a reason why they would like to join us. So I think it's an attraction for a certain generational candidate.
Yeah, and maybe makes you stand out from in a crowded market.
Yeah, yeah.
When it's hard to differentiate yourself sometimes.
Definitely. And I think from a purely a commercial point of view, not that we did it because we wanted to generate business out of it, but this is just a fallout of it. We've gained quite a lot of business from people who share our ideals and ethics and want to work with us. So that's been positive in that respect.
And I imagine they're good customers as
well.
Yeah,
you
want clients. You like to work with, to your values.
Yeah, you like to work with people who share the same thoughts and values as yourself. So that's been another positive for us.
And from your team's point of view who are working there, have they noticed a difference?
Yeah, I mean, we really focused on the people as the first step we're looking at with this. But yeah, we've got good retention rates in terms of staffing. And I'd like to think people know that work for us know that we, you know, really value them highly in terms of the, obviously one of the pillars in B Corp is workers. So it's about not just sort of financial rewards, but it's about other stuff, you know, sort of career progression and there's clear pathways. So yeah, definitely on the people side of things.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? And from your people point of view, you've got quite a lot of staff, haven't you, down in your business in Durham. Do you feel like they think it's more fun being part of a B Corp?
Oh, I'm not sure they would say. I mean, from a people perspective, so we're a team of about 120 now. And interestingly, we asked the team recently, and particularly people who had joined us in the last 3 months, whether or not B Corp certification made a difference to their decision-making process, because it is an extremely difficult labour market and attracting talent is tough. So we asked them if it influenced their decision. And I think it was, if you did the maths, about at least 80% of them felt it did. And I think after being on this journey for quite some time now, the team can directly correlate the way the business feels to them, the environment within which they work, the way in which they feel rewarded and recognised in a way that is aligned to B Corp. So I think it does make a difference, but I don't think they would say it's more fun. I actually think B Corp has helped us make sure that we have a balance, but in a really professional, business-minded way, rather than defaulting to, you know, it all being lovely and fluffy and fun and so on and so forth.
Well, I guess what fun is kind of like, are people happy at work as well, aren't they? Isn't it?
Yeah, well, since becoming a B Corp, we've had our highest ever engagement levels in terms of, we consistently now hit well over 98% of the team would recommend Umi as a place to work and so on and so forth. So the rigour that it gives you in terms of evidence and precision in when you're building your business plans and so on and so forth about what you're going to do and where you need to invest your business resources, I think makes a real difference.
And you mentioned earlier, Nikki, that you're 100% employee owned. Is that a decision you took based on your B Corp journey, or was that something you did beforehand?
No, so we set the business up with an intention to adopt that model. But when we set it up, we couldn't find the right version of it. So back in 2007, it wasn't a very common ownership model at all. And you had the likes of John Lewis, Iga here, and a few others to kind of look at. So we actually made the transition to the legal structure in 2010. So quite some time ago, we became 100% employee owned. And we're a little bit different in that it's completely equal. So I don't, as chief executive, have any more than anybody else. Everybody has the same level of ownership. And that's not right for every business, but it works really, really well for us.
That sounds like a great place to be if you've got ownership and it's equal all across the board.
Well,
very unusual.
So, but I'm a bit biased.
Yeah.
So B Corp's been really good for your businesses. I'm going to turn to Aman now, because you work in the construction sector, which has had its challenges and is going through a challenging time. Does B Corp help you when the market circumstances are really challenging and you're up against it? Would you find a pressure to go, well, actually, I just need to make the payroll this month and I've got to put profit first for a while?
I think working in construction with the traditional mindset and the traditional attitudes has been challenging. A lot of people within our industry don't understand what B Corp is and what it stands for. But ultimately, we went on this journey for us. It was a selfish reason. We wanted to not necessarily compete with other companies within construction, but compete against other companies worldwide and see how good we are. Balancing profit and purpose is a challenge, especially within construction. But like I mentioned earlier, Elaine, if you do the right things, I think profit's a natural byproduct of doing what's correct.
Something I heard this morning which really resonated, they said, the leader does the right thing, the manager does the thing right. And I thought, mm-hmm. Oh, that's quite a good little saying, isn't mm-hmm. it? And so you're a leader doing the right thing.
I hope so.
Well, I'm giving you that accolade right now, so we'll go with that for today at least. So if someone's listening and they're thinking about perhaps investigating, you've already mentioned, well, just go online and do the assessment. Which businesses would you recommend take that further and actually accredit?
I think every company within the construction industry should see where they sit, because we're in an industry which has a lot of greenwash. So do it for yourself. Learn your weaknesses, learn your strengths and see where you can improve. There's no downside to it.
Have you found that the greenwashing has become more apparent since you went down this journey?
Yes.
I think that's probably a leading question, wasn't it, to be fair?
Everyone likes to suggest they're doing the right things, but to be independently verified, I think, is quite powerful.
And do you, Nikki, do you see other companies that talk the talk a lot and you think, oh, if you actually did that accreditation, you'd realise where your gaps were? Do you get frustrated by other people, or do you feel like, I don't know, you tell me?
I'm actually, where I sit today is I'm actually really encouraged about how many people are considering their broader stakeholders more and how they measure success in a more balanced way. So I think generally there is a fantastic movement building in that regard. And I think in terms of businesses that I would recommend should go for B Corp, I think it's whether or not it adds value to your business, because you have to be really committed to it. It's a costly process. It's a time intensive process and you have to improve. So, you know, it just because you get out the starting blocks with your certification, you won't hold on to it if in 3 years' time you haven't improved in each of those five areas. The certification method is probably going to change in the next year or so as well. It'll get refreshed as it normally does. So, like when businesses go for ISOs or, I don't know, cyber essentials or something like that, they do it for a reason because it adds value to them and their business and allows them to achieve more. Do it for that reason, as Aman was saying. Don't just do it for a badge because you're going to spend an awful lot of time and an awful lot of money for something that you probably won't manage to hold on to if you're doing it for that reason.
I don't think you would get accredited if it wasn't really truly in your DNA as a business. It's not just a certificate that you can put on a wall.
Yeah, no, I'd agree, Graham.
Yeah, good message.
What's the process in terms of whether they're going to approve you or not? Do they interview you or how does that work?
Well, we did it. It was COVID at the time, so everything was online. I'm guessing everything is online still. So it took about 2 months. So you achieve the score of over 80, and then that's effectively audited. So as I've said, the B Lab will pick on certain questions and ask for tangible evidence that what you've said is actually the truth.
And do you think it's harder or any different for service-based industries?
I think it's probably harder for physical product-based industries because of the supply chain point. I think that makes it a little bit more complex.
That's interesting. Have you felt that, Aman, that it's...
I have, because there's only a certain amount of things you can control yourself. You can control how you treat your people. You can control your culture and your values. But how far down the supply chain can you control? All we can do is encourage our supply chain to be better, which enables us to be better.
And are you seeing that shift in the supply chain?
We're pushing as hard as we can, Sally, to be the change we want to see.
And with the B Corp movement, it's changing, isn't it? Mm. So you've had the likes, and there's been some controversies in that. So I'll ask you about the likes of Nespresso joining, and there's larger corporates, and obviously BrewDog, which joined and then were asked to leave. Are you concerned that it's maybe getting too big?
I'm not sure whether too big is the issue. I think there will always be people who find fault in whatever accreditation or awards are given. So for me, fundamentally, it's just about having trust in that organisation. And I have trust in that organisation that it's something which evolves as time goes on. It just doesn't, it's not static. It adapts and it evolves.
And it's good sometimes that they kick people out
if
you're not
for sure.
compliant.
For sure, yeah.
Personally, I think there's credibility in the fact that people are asked to leave because they're not upholding the ethics and the principles, but also the practice, the actual practice at the end of the day of leading and managing your business with a very fair and equitable eye on each of those three success measures. And with reference to it becoming too big, B Corp exists to build and create a movement. That's its job. I think it goes back to a point that Aman made, which is if you're going into this to give yourself a means of being able to sell more product to people because it gives you a differentiator from a marketing perspective, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons because it will be short-lived. Because, of course, as the movement grows, you're not necessarily going to have that sort of standout as perhaps we enjoy today in terms of differentiation. But the movement exists to get businesses to be better businesses so we can exist in a more equitable, fair, inclusive manner. So the bigger it gets, the better it gets, as far as I'm concerned.
And it feels like it's got quite a community feel to it.
Yeah.
You know, you all came in the studio today and you know each other from B Corp events. Are there any entrepreneurs in that space who you look at and you really admire as a B Corp?
Less so individuals, but certainly businesses that I've come across, for sure. And actually, I'll make a bit of a plug, if I may, because B Lab in the UK is running its first big festival this year in September.
Oh, tell us more.
Yeah, so it's a 2-day festival in September It's going to be in and across Oxford. There is a rationale for that, which I won't labour today, and you can have a look on the website. But if anybody's thinking about becoming part of the movement or just wants to hang out actually with some really forward-thinking, exciting businesses for that inspiration, I'd really recommend they go along to that. But yeah, there's businesses like in the UK, Cook, you know, the frozen food business, and they also have a number of retail outlets on the high street. They're a fantastic business, and they were one of the founders, one of their chairs of the business was one of the founders of B-Lab UK.
And how about you, Aman? Are there other businesses that you admire?
There's a company in Bristol called Orca, which is led by a chap called James Ewan, and he's one that got the accreditation first and really encouraged me to go through the process and see where we sit. Another member of the course was a guy called Adam Woodley, who owns a company called Sinewave. They do EV charging. And closer to home, I think Rob Charlton at Space is doing a great job of raising standards within our industry of construction.
Yeah, I think anything which is storytelling can be so powerful. And if it's people in your sector, or at least a little bit relatable, you think, oh God, they're doing it. Maybe I can. And that's part of the reason for inviting you three on today, is to tell your story. And hopefully others, if you're listening out there, you think, if these guys can do it, it's something I should look at.
Is there anything you wish you'd all known when you first started your B Corp journey that you could share with people who are thinking, oh yeah, I'd like to have a go at that?
For me, I did it solely, so I wouldn't do that again. I think, you know, get people on board in your organisation to help you collect all that data.
Why did you do it by yourself? Did you feel like it was a burden to ask other people to help, or was it just because it was COVID and you were working more at home?
Yeah, no, it was just, I think, it was a personal project really for me, but which was obviously had massive relevance for our business. But yeah, it was during COVID, so it was kind of, you couldn't really collaborate together on it. But yeah, get people involved.
Because it's an entity-wide thing, isn't it?
It is,
so
yeah.
So you get people from across the entity to
collect
get
the
behind
data,
it from day
yeah,
one.
And understand, yeah.
I think for myself, create a team that can drive it forward. And perhaps most importantly, create time, because it's very time-consuming. Not only to see the changes that need to be done, but to implement the changes that need to be done. So we had a team that had one day a week fully put aside to B Corps and see where we come out.
Yeah, and that's a huge time commitment, isn't it? So you've got to be committed as an entity that this is the direction you want to go in and to make that time worthwhile.
Totally. You've got to be prepared to look in the mirror, and a lot of companies aren't.
Is that one day a week just while you were getting the certification, or do you have that time dedicated to it now?
Well, it's a little bit less now. We have 2 hours every Thursday morning where there's key stakeholders discuss where we can improve. We've got an internal target of trying to improve 20% year on year on our score. So when we get ready to recertify in 2.5 years' time, we're ready, and it's a lot less painful.
Good to keep it ongoing.
Make sure it's alive and within the business, I think, is vital. Otherwise, it does become just a badge on the wall.
It is a long-term journey, isn't it? It's not just we've got it and that's great. Let's.
No, it's a step change forever, yeah, isn't it? You're committing forever to do things in a different way.
Well, the thing as well is it will evolve again in probably, I think, 2025. So the standards will be refreshed. They have been changed and refreshed before to meet today's world, really, for some of the reasons that we talked about in terms of why some people aren't in the movement and retain their certification. And they will be quite significant changes. So I don't know whether you guys had a look at the proposed changes and fed into those, but they will materially change how businesses are assessed. So we can't stand still just for that reason.
And how do you keep it alive at UMI, Nikki?
I think because we have always used those three success measures that I mentioned as our guide from the outset of setting up the business, it is really how we act and behave. You know, it's custom and practice in that regard. But on a really practical level, what we do is we have our 5-year strategy, and then we set a business plan each year within that. And every year we set the business plan, our strategic success measures and KPIs have to be aligned to all 5 of the criteria within the B Corp certification. So if we can't say this is the area that it impacts on, whether that be customers, governance, community, if it doesn't impact on one of those areas, we question why we're doing it. So that's how on a planning basis and on a day-to-day basis we we make sure it really is how we live and breathe.
So it's really at the sort of pinnacle of your organisation, you're using it to determine your objectives.
And that's proved really, really valuable in terms of a business planning tool.
Excellent. So just thinking about, we talked about local businesses or B Corp businesses that you admire. If you could get into the boardroom of another business, and this could be one that is a B Corp or one that you think perhaps should be a B Corp, but it isn't, and you're wondering whether they're having that discussion, where would you like to go and be a fly on the wall in?
An interesting character is Jack Welch from GE Electric. The reason I would pick Jack Welch is because he's so different to how we are as a business. So I think it'd be, I think it'd just be interesting to see the culture clash.
For me, it sounds a bit trite, but Virgin. So not because of Richard Branson, but Virgin as a brand, because they're really trying to, and Holly Branson herself is a real champion and advocate of this stuff. She's one of the ambassadors for the Better Business Act, for example. But they've got such a complex business, and we were talking earlier about the depth and breadth of supply chains and so on and so forth. I'd just love to understand how they square it all off and really sort of get under the skin of it. So I think, yeah.
That would be fascinating, wouldn't it? And you think, how do you get through that in the duration of a meeting, all the different aspects that you could be talking about?
Yeah, but how does that ethic actually cross all of those different businesses under that brand, you know, from space to, goodness, it's just immense.
So. Space to planes to trains to banks.
Yeah,
it's everything, like, isn't it? And Graham?
I suppose my perspective would be having a look at somebody who's in the same space as us, a professional services. So I know that Muckles have recently become accredited in the region, so it'd be interesting to sit down with them and share a bit of best practice. They might be doing stuff that...
You probably could organise that, couldn't you? They're just around the corner from you. Yeah. I'm sure you could organise that. It'd be fascinating. You're all really, really busy because you've just told me it's taken lots of extra hours to get this done. How do you find time to carve out of your diary to have actual thinking time or reflection time in your busy lives?
From a point of view of, I can't take credit for our B certification. It's definitely the team. It was a whole team effort. But in terms of my thinking time, usually the phrase is, I've got a date with a spaniel. Because when I'm out walking the dog, which I do religiously, luckily for the dog, go out for about 5 miles a day, that's when I do my thinking.
And while you're walking the dog, do you listen to podcasts or do you just have fresh air?
I often look at people when they're walking, and it's really cool now, isn't it, to have these big headphones on and all the rest of it. And I think to myself, what are they doing? You know, it's just more noise. And one of the things that I really enjoy being out with the dog and just in amongst the birds and the wind and all the rest of it is no noise, because that helps me think. I know for some people they're complete opposites of that. But for me, the lack of noise and just being out there amongst
forest
it.
Forest bathing, isn't it? That's
is what that
what
it's called? I'm going to say that in future. It's much cooler.
It's amazing, actually, how many entrepreneurs have dogs and use that time to walk their dog and get that sort of space away.
Yeah, my spaniel is definitely my therapy for sure. Yeah.
Do you have a dog?
I do, yes. Exactly the same. Exactly
so you the same. You use the dog walking time to have time. Do you listen to podcasts?
Not on the
walk?
Dog walk. In the car, I listen to podcasts, but not with the dog. Like, Nikki, just absorb what's around you, you know, breathe in nature. And I know it sounds a bit fluffy. And
okay, we've got two forest bathers.
Yeah. A little bit different. We do have a dog, but I never take him for a walk.
Oh, a mad dog.
I know. It's my wife and my daughter love that dog, so that's their time.
What do you do then?
I'm a member of a spa, so I think the important thing is to get away from your phone. Switch your phone off, leave it in the locker, and time just goes so slowly. But one problem I have noticed is I have some great ideas in the spa, but my attention span's so short by the time I'm back to the changing rooms, I've forgotten them. So positives and negatives.
I think, you know, no one has their best ideas sat in front of a screen at your desk. It's always somewhere else. And you probably have great ideas on your dog walks as well. And you're in the spa. You've got to have to find some mechanism for recording them though, aren't you?
Totally. Something, getting away from it all was something I developed around 2019, before COVID. We've all got really busy lives, and if you're not at your best, you're not at your best for your people. So taking that time out is vital. If I go back to 2018, 2019, there were parts of myself where I was just unhappy. My family were unhappy, but I had all the material things. So being able to recalibrate and meditate and get back to back to zero and be still. I think it's vital for any business leader.
And are you good at sticking to the regime of actually going to your spa and taking the time out, or is that something that is easily scratched off the agenda?
I've actually learned that you do need to be a little bit selfish. So when you're giving everything to everyone else all of the time, if there's a bit of time for yourself and it's protected, that's not a bad thing.
It's not being selfish at all. I think it's like putting your own oxygen mask on first.
Totally. And I totally agree with that point. It's something I didn't see in the early days. From myself, I'm from a working class background, and we were always taught to work harder, give more. But the reality is you're better off doing a little bit less, but of a higher quality.
Pace yourself, isn't it? And take the breaks, because you'll come back, well, you'll know, you come back more energised and ready to perform at a higher level if you've not been flat out all the time.
Massively.
So just in terms of everything that we've talked about today, you know, you've all come a long way on your journeys. You've all been really successful. What moment of that period as an entrepreneur would you relive and celebrate the most?
For myself, it was our first order as a company as Tapered Plus. We had to wait 4 months for that first order, but I've never had a buzz like it. Since then, we've had some really big orders across Europe. But that first order, which isn't too far away from here, which was the Discovery Museum, will always be a happy day.
What did you do to celebrate then when that came in the door?
I think it's the first time in about 10 years I drove home from a meeting with the windows open and music blasting.
Were you singing?
I was.
Ah, very good.
I was very, very, very poorly. But if you could bottle up that feeling, I think I'd be a multimillionaire.
It's often when businesses start and the founders come in and they say it's that first win, that when it almost validates that what you set out to do
it does.
Is working, and that's quite special.
It does. I put a post up on Facebook when that first order came, and it pops up every year, and it just fills me with gratitude.
And what about you, Nikki, in terms of big wins? How have you celebrated those?
I think for me, cause it seems such a long time now, but I think for me, was when we launched the Umi brand, because we haven't always been called Umi. And we went through for about 18 months a really curious, deep, cathartic process with our stakeholders, all of our stakeholders, because we just had an itch that what we called ourselves, how we described ourselves, how we presented ourselves through our brand wasn't really us. And one of the lovely bits of feedback that was consistently coming back from our customers and suppliers is your brand doesn't really reflect the personality of you all. You know, you are serious, you do work hard, but you're really good fun and you're nice people. And anyway, so we went through a really lengthy process. We brought in some external advisors around brand and so on and so forth into the business. And we involved lots and lots of people amongst the team. And then we threw a big party to launch it. And we had this wonderfully narrated, it's on the website actually, it gives me goosebumps even now when I watch it, this wonderfully narrated story of why Umi. And it was just an absolutely joyous moment, because it was everything seemed to just cement together, you know, and properly and work. And it was just lovely.
And nice to have a party to celebrate as well.
Well, it was, and it really connected the team. And I think for the first time ever, even though we were, you know, an employee-owned business and so on and so forth, there was a connection amongst the team that I don't think we had before.
And did you drive home with the music blaring in the car?
I didn't. I stayed in a hotel and went out and partied. But I would have done if I'd been driving.
And what was your high, Graham?
Just after I became MD, we looked at some five-year goals, and one of those was to win an award as an accountancy firm, and we managed to do that in 22, I think it was. So that was, pretty sort of, again, just justification and a little bit. B Corp was a big part in the kind of differentiating us from our sort of peers.
And where's the trophy?
It's still at, because they... I think the category got cancelled, so we are still the medium-sized Northeast accountant of the year.
So
it's at work, we've got to keep the trophy.
I hope it's in pride of place.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been really interesting to learn a little bit more about your own B Corp journeys. And I believe there'll be some messages in here for anyone who's listening, which is get yourselves on that B Corp website, have a go at the assessment, that will teach you something and you'll learn something. So definitely have a go with that. And if you want to know more, there's B Corp socials and events that take place that our three guests are heavily involved in. I'm sure they'd be happy to talk to you and learn more. So reach out if you want to learn more, and let's get this movement rolling.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. There's absolutely loads of episodes of A Cast of Entrepreneurs, so check out who else has been on the podcast. Give us a listen, like, subscribe, leave us a review, and tune in next time for another exciting edition of A Cast of Entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm.